The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome into Highway to Health. I am your host, David Sears, and I'm joined this week by a man you've seen on television, you've heard on radio, you've seen everywhere, because he's a man that is a big, big baller when it comes to psychological analysis for the news people. Oh, Dr. Josh Klepo. How you doing, Doc?
I'm doing good, David. How are you? It's good to talk with you again.
I'm doing well. Now, Dr. Josh and I go back. Back in my days on Talk 99.5, I forget what the topic was, but we needed a psychological approach and analysis of it. And I reached out to UAB, and they gave me Dr. Josh Klepo. And then he started becoming a regular guest. And then he and Tony came on. Tony stole him for the opening drive, and they did a show on Saturday night. Oh, what was it called? I forget the original name, and then it became the Curry and Klepo show.
It was The Web.
The Web, that's right. It was The Web, and then it became Curry and Klepo. And then now he and Tony do a hit on Good Day Alabama every Thursday, talking about The Summer I Turned Pretty yesterday. So,
oh my God, it's been a while, right? Like, I don't know if my own psychological, it's been good for my psychological health. I don't know if you remember when I was on Talk 99.5 with you, and cannot remember what the circumstance was, but I was asked to host the show myself. And I don't know if you remember this, because this has got a mental health component to it. Do you remember that?
It was the morning that Matt got taken to the hospital and Ani had a massive migraine attack. And I kept getting a call about 2 a.m. and I was like, who the bleep is this? And it turned out it was Ani's husband calling me. So I get in there and it's just me and Juice and I've got to do this show. And I'm like, well, I've trained for this. I can do 4 hours. And then thank God you came in, I want to say at 8, and you held over and helped me do the final 2 hours. So,
yeah. Okay. No. So maybe this was even a different one then. There was one when, and maybe this was it, and I was scared to death. Don't you remember?
Oh, you were filling in and I was trying to like, dude, you got this. You talk for a living. We're just calming.
Do you remember how much anxiety? I mean, here is right here. Like you said, here I am. I've done this a million times. And when it occurred to me that it's just me, I mean, you were there, but it's like just me. I'm like, oh my God, what am I going to say? I brought in 30 pages of notes. I ran through those in the first like 5 minutes. And I remember looking to you. And I remember also going in break saying, like, please, desperate, please help me, help me. And I actually think it has a lot of relevance for our conversation today because, you know, we can go anywhere you want, but you think about it, that definitely wasn't in any way an emergency. But man, my brain and my body was in massive fight or flight. And if it wasn't for you, I literally don't think I would have been able to speak for the rest of the time. I couldn't do it. I could not do it.
Well, this is something that's come to me later in life. Actually, within the past month, I've been reading a lot of philosophical books, The Courage to Be Disliked, The Courage to Be Happy. I'm almost finished with that. And it gets into Adlerian psychology. And I've realized it's really interesting. And a lot of what he says makes sense. The basis of Adler psychology is that all problems are personal problems and that, interpersonal interaction and interpersonal problems cause a lot of the issues we have with other family members, with other friends, and you can blow it up on a macro perspective and say, the problems of the world are all interpersonal problems. And now in the courage to love, he's talking about how the greatest form of connection is getting rid of love, self-interest and others' interest and having us interest. And it's really changed my perspective on
that's great
on life. And I've realized I may not be able to control everyone, but I can treat everyone as my brother for the greater consciousness. I think you call it the human consciousness. I forget what the exact
collective consciousness.
Yes. Yes. So, yes. And yeah. I've tried to change my approach to people, and a lot of what Adler talks about is not judging them because you don't know what they're going through. So you can only react. You can only control yourself and your reaction. So it's,
we could use a lot of that right now, huh?
we could, but we're going to have you on again. And unfortunately our time is going to cut short today due to just absolute chaos in both of our lives. But I had Dr. Josh on cause I want to talk about the importance of mental health. Highway to Health breaks down the various aspects of health, and we've had on physical health. We've had on nutritional health, creative health, spiritual health. Now let's get into the hard stuff. Mental health. Mental health, especially for men, is a topic that has a lot of stigma to it. Men that tend to be more open about their mental health get criticized because they are weak, they are soft. AJ Brown with the Philadelphia Eagles was reading a book on the sidelines to help control his anger because he was upset about what was going on, and people ripped him for reading a book on the sidelines, but it actually helped him stay focused and perform better in the game. So anywho, big macro topic. So Dr. Josh, why is it important to focus on your mental health?
I mean, I think one of the things that we obviously in when we talk about health, we talk about all these different areas. But if you sort of think about it, I mean, this gets into mind-body dualism, but think about it. Your mental health, I'm using air quotes, it's all being driven by the same thing. I mean, even if we sort of dial it in and we stay away from spirituality just for a second, although spirituality and spiritualness is amazing for your mental health. But if we get like super physical or anatomical, it's your brain. Mm-hmm. Your brain controls everything. And so in the same way that your brain is controlling, ultimately controlling insulin resistance, it's controlling pain signals, it's controlling, you know, all that. It's the same pathways are controlling emotional regulation, various emotions, thoughts, right? So I think a lot of times we have to talk about it as mental health, but I always tell people it's that same thing in between your ears is what's driving your arm pain as much as it may be driving your sadness or your anxiety. It's just that, particularly for mental health, we've created something that at its extremes is very scary for us. Because it doesn't look or sound or feel like anything we know. But even that I can sort of equate, let me take a step back. If you think about when you have stubbed your toe, nothing's broken, but it hurts like crazy, right? But then it's okay, and then you're fine. If I chopped off your toe, there would be lots of blood. If you're not a physician, you know, like me, and I'm not a physician, ugh, it's horrible, it's beyond it. Well, if you sort of think about your mental health, it kind of works the same way. I can have a really sad day or a sad moment, and it's bad, it's really bad, it hurts, and then it resolves, and it's okay. But what if that sad becomes depression, and I can't ever snap out of it, right? And so it's this idea that, like, our mental health is our thoughts and our feelings and our emotions and our actions, but it's a part of the way we operate in the world. It just is. I think it's scary because you can't see it.
It's not tangible. It's all perception, you know, because it's how you perceive the world.
It is. Now, what gets really interesting, what gets better, and when I try to talk to people about sort of why mental health is kind of like any other health, I always go to anxiety. Because if you think about being anxious, you know, it's easy to say to people, to folks, you know, do you ever get stressed? Yes, I do. Well, what happens when you get stressed? I don't know. My stomach hurts. you know, or I my mouth gets dry, you know, or my hands shake, you know. Well, okay, is that physical or mental?
It's both.
Yes. Right. Right. And so it's so hard. It's easy for us to separate it kind of on the outside, but when you talk about mental health, it's as physiological as anything else.
Now, we'll get into the stigma of mental health therapy and mental health counseling for men. But first, I want to just go over real basically, what's the difference between a counselor, a therapist, a psychologist, and a psychiatrist?
Thank you. I've been doing this for, oh my gosh, I'm old now. I've been doing this for 30 years. And it is truly amazing. This is a fault in our profession, I believe. How many well-informed, well-educated people to this day don't know the difference between even a psychiatrist and a psychologist? I mean, people who, they know the difference between a endocrinologist and a cardiologist, but if you ask the difference, they don't know. So let's go through, let's work this or psychiatrist. I'm emphasizing it. The words, because people sounds like psychiatrists. Psychiatrists are medical doctors, so they have an MD after their name. Now, you can have psychiatric nurse practitioners, and we could. There's lots of extenders, but a psychiatrist has an MD. These are the doctors who can write prescriptions. Unlike maybe a psychologist, their training. Back in the day, way back in the day, even before there were psychologists doing interventions, psychiatrists were also doing therapy. So they were medical doctors doing therapy and doing medications and procedures and lobotomies and like all that kind of stuff. Fast forward to today, the vast majority, and there's some exceptions, but the vast majority of psychiatrists mostly focus on sort of the neurochemistry in your brain and how that relates to your emotional and cognitive thinking status. And they work with different kinds of medications, mostly to help create a healthier you. So that's a psychiatrist. I mean, and again, I'm broad brushing. There are lots of psychiatrists who also do therapy, but for the vast majority of them, it's the medication side. Now I'll go the other side. Start with a psychologist. Psychologists actually, to be called a psychologist, for the most part, to be called a psychologist, you need to have a doctorate in psychology. For the most part, there's some exceptions. And so these tend to be the people who have, after their names, the initials are either PhD or, in some cases, PSYD, PsyD, which is a professional degree. But not medical doctors. As a psychologist, typically 4 years of post-undergraduate training, 1 year of clinical residency, 1 year of postdoctoral training. So it's a PhD with typically for clinical 6 years postgraduate training. And they're the ones who will do psychotherapy. They will do a variety of assessments depending on their areas of specialization. Some people may have heard of neuropsychology or neuropsychological batteries or assessments, sometimes things like intelligence testing. So a wide variety of mental and cognitive testing is in addition to treatment, talk therapy. Okay. Counselor and therapist. Now we're starting to get into areas that have they have definitions at the licensing level, and then they also kind of have general definitions. And this is where things do get confusing. You can call yourself a therapist. Anyone can call themselves a therapist. They may not be licensed, to practice therapy. They may not be a licensed professional counselor or a marriage and family therapist. And so a therapist is typically a master's level trained clinician. So they're providing services, usually talk therapy or some assessments. I think it's important because people feel like it's a, not intellect, but these are people who have less training. Doesn't mean that they're not qualified at all to do what they do, but they have less training than somebody who has a PhD in psychology. So therapists will be doing counseling, lots of talk interventions. When you move to counselor, it gets even more gray because you can have things like peer counselors who are, you see this sometimes in addiction treatment. They may have had some training, some certifications, but they don't have a degree in that. You will have counselors, a school counselor who may also have, in some cases, a PhD or an EDD. But counselors are definitely not prescribing medication. They can be doing talk therapy. They can be doing sort of assessment for other services that are needed. They can absolutely be a mental health provider. I think the most important thing you just heard in that huge monologue is that those different names really can tack on to different kinds of areas of expertise. And we don't do a good job educating the public about that. You know, so I know that took a long time, but what I always tell people is if you're looking for help and you say, I just need to talk to a counselor, that may be very different than saying, I just need to talk to a psychologist or I just need to talk to a psychiatrist. And so when in doubt, you know, whether you're Googling it, ChatGPT, or talking to maybe your physician, make sure that you know that those names mean something different.
Thank you. I knew the difference. Psychiatrists could give you drugs. Psychologists yes. could not. They were just there for you to help analyze and you come to a self-realization. That's another thing that I think is misunderstood is a lot of people think psychiatrists and psychologists will give you the answer. The point of that is not for them to give you the answer, but help for you to come to a self-realization. How difficult is that to get, or are they really supposed to say you need to stop doing this and do this?
So it's both. See, and I love that you asked that question because, you know, we have so many stereotypes, partly, you know, you made in the beginning of the podcast, like Josh is on TV and does it. Part of the reason I got into all the media stuff was I'd watched the way psychologists were sort of portrayed in television movies. And I was like, oh my God, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing because
you're not a fan of Dr. Phil. You know,
I was way back in the day before he sort of had to evolve and morph and anyway. So yes, way back in the day. And I actually think he did a very good job way back in the day because he did a very good job sort of educating the public about what a psychologist is, what psychologists do. It got extreme. But to your point, part of psychotherapy is helping people come to answers that are important and true for them. But it is not the proverbial, yes, I see. And how does that make you feel? I see. How does that make you feel? And you're just on the other side, you're waiting for them to say something. Yeah, we say things all the time. We say, we're like, you sure you want to do that? That sounds pretty dumb to me. You know, now it depends on the relationship. But I think where that comes from, this sort of self-realization, if without getting too historical, if you think about it, if you're in therapy with me, it is your life. It is your brain. You do have to come to an understanding that works for you if I tell you it and it works, awesome. You know, like, great. But there's times where, because I haven't lived your experience, I haven't been in your head for your life, there are bits and pieces that you, me asking you questions, me probing, helps your brain create the answer. Your brain, not my brain, your brain. Does that make sense?
Exactly. And some of it is not the, like you say, and how does that make you feel on a loop? But some of it, there are probing questions. When I see my psychologist, she does ask some stuff that she takes you some places that I don't want to go to, but she kind of grabs my hand and leads me that way. So I'm trying to break down some of the stereotypes and misunderstandings of therapy and psychological therapy from a psychologist or psychologist.
Particularly for men. Well, listen, so one thing you just said here, which is beautiful. I'm so glad you said this. We're wired to protect ourselves. And so particularly when something's emotionally dangerous for us, we protect ourselves very often without even recognizing, called defense mechanisms. And so, like you said, when you go to your psychologist, she may be probing and your answers may be very earnest and honest, but your shield is up. And based on your answers, we can hear that. And so part of what we're doing, and it comes after, you know, the other thing I tell people, you're in therapy, you're in control. Not, you know, there's no mind mapping. But part of what we're doing is saying, hey, this is pretty scary. Let's go here just a little bit together, see what happens, versus you trying to go there yourself, which you may not even recognize that you're guarding against it. The other fear, I was just going to say, that men typically have, more so than women, is they're scared to death that they're going to start crying, which is, it's like, oh my God, am I going to start crying? And you know, my wife's a psychologist and she'd be like, I don't know. You might. And then what would happen? And the fear really usually is I'm going to start and I'll, like, if you will, fall to pieces. Mm. And most times that doesn't happen.
Well, it's, and we can start getting into this now. Men view physical wounds as the only type of wound. They don't really deal with mental trauma, abandonment issues. Well, is that just because the way society is set up, or are they trained at home? Where do you see most of these issues with men opposing going to psychological therapy?
I think a couple of things. Absolutely, it is a intergenerational, you know, you can dial it back as far as you want, but it is, you know, boys don't cry, suck it up. Misunderstanding the difference between being nervous and having an anxiety disorder, you know? And so this whole idea of men don't express emotions. It's very interesting, David. Again, I'm old enough now to have watched the generational changes. And I can tell you, in particular, while I don't do much psychotherapy, I work with a lot of professionals, executives who are in there, let's just say they're 30s. Their 30s. I'm 57. That stereotype, because of generational changes, because of social media, because of the internet, is changing dramatically. It's not, it's still there, but a 30-year-old or a 15-year-old knows exactly what depression is today. My generation, I sure as hell didn't know what depression was when I was 15. I had no idea. No idea. Because we didn't have access to it. So I think that the view is changing. I think the other piece that we always forget, if you have a doctor's appointment and you're going to go see, I don't know, an endocrinologist, And you go, I went to the doctor. I'm like, oh, are you sick? No. Oh, and what kind of doctor did you go to? Or what doctor did you see? Oh, I saw a cardiologist. Oh, okay. Like, are you okay? Yeah. You think about if you saw a psychologist, first of all, nobody's saying that they went to the psychologist. Or the psychiatrist is even worse, right? And so the reason I'm saying that is people don't put it out there the same way that they say, well, I went to a cardiologist or I went to my urologist. And so it's that classic, people don't know, men don't know, David and I are buds, and we both may go to the same psychiatrist and have no idea to go to the same psychiatrist, and we don't tell each other. And so I don't think he goes, even though I go, and David doesn't think he goes, that I go, even though he goes.
When did you think you started to see this shift? Was it my generation, the Zennials, millennial generation?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you saw it from, if you know, way back-ish, the 60s was the first shift, because thoughts, feeling, free love, expression, that was the first. 70s got even better, if you will, better from a, it's less of a stigma, and it kept going. There's definitely regional differences. So here in the South, you know, people kid, everybody in LA will tell you about their therapist, and not so much here. But I think if you're looking more globally or more nationally, I think the advent of the internet and maybe cable television, I think the two of those things probably did it.
Now, when you say you get frustrated with views of psychiatrists and psychologists in the media, what would be the best example? Is Good Will Hunting the best example of what an actual psychological session would be? Or what to you is the best example?
There was a show, I think it's still on. They did two, there's two versions. One was a fictional version. I can't, it might've been called Therapy or something. And they did a more of a reality show, reality in the sense of they had a camera in while people were having therapy. And what they found is that if, unless you really edit it, it's incredibly boring because there's a lot of talk and there's no, from an entertainment purpose, there's not a whole lot of crying and spiciness, right? I think that Good Will Hunting, I think that, I would say the other thing I would say again, much like other situations, the actor or times we're much more accurate now in our portrayal. You will see psychiatrists who are not, you won't see psychiatrists, excuse me, who are sitting behind somebody laying on the couch, asking them to interpret their dreams unless it's done in, you know, in jest. Mm-hmm. So I think the portrayals are much better. I also think that we have to be very careful. We tend to grab snippets, where, to your earliest question, where we as the public are combining comments from a therapist, counselor, spiritual guidance, healer, psychologist, psychiatrist. We kind of lump it all together. And we go, oh, well, that's what therapy is. No, that's like 12 different things, and three of them may not even be good. You know, and I don't know which ones, but again, buyer beware, much like in any other profession.
What, I know we got to wrap things up because we got to get out of here shortly. What would be the best method for finding a psychologist or psychiatrist? What would you say, go to your general practitioner? Or would you try to web him or Google it or something? What would you say is the best way to do it?
Yeah, so let's say this. Let me give you the ugly part of this, which you and I have had conversations about this. In our country, there is a significant shortage of mental health providers, particularly psychiatrists, but across the board. COVID made things even more challenging. It made more challenging. The reason I'm saying this is, as much as I could tell you, go Google or whatever psychologist in my area. The number one thing for most people is going to be, do you have health insurance or not? If you don't, and I always say this, you always can get care. We live in a country where for any kind of care, there is always free care. So I want this to be very clear that it's not if you don't have insurance, you know, you can't get care. But your health insurance is going to determine who you can get care from, how much it's going to cost, how long you're going to wait in terms of waiting to be seen. Now, if it's an emergency, if you have thoughts that life isn't worth living, if you're thinking about killing yourself, et cetera, we're going in the emergency room. I mean, that is an emergency. But to your point, how do you find the person? I would say number one thing, this is what I tell people, if you have health insurance, the number one thing is you very often get online, but you go online or you call customer service and you ask two questions. Can you explain to me, tell me what my coverage is for mental health services? Again, no different than, you know, orthopedic. What is my coverage and who are providers that are in the network that my health insurance covers? That sucks that we have to do that, but that is a reality check because that is what you have to do to go see somebody if you have insurance. If you don't have insurance, you absolutely can Google low cost free mental health services in my area, and you will instantly get a listing. So that there are resources, but I want people to understand you cannot just walk in and expect to get care, but that's not unlike walking into, I don't know, you know, a physician's office. Is there urgent care? Absolutely. There's urgent psychiatric care, but that's not the same as establishing care with a therapist.
Dr. Josh, we have so much more left to talk about.
I know.
but luckily, I know your number, so I can get you back on the show.
I was going to say, you know my number, and you can call me day or night. And I appreciate you doing this topic, and I appreciate your questions because they're the kinds of questions that even if we know the answers, hearing them again and again is probably not a bad thing.
All right. If someone wants to follow you on social media and see your lovely inspirational videos and your great talks that you do, where can they find you?
On Instagram, I am at Mental Drive, one word. Same thing on TikTok, at Mental Drive. You can go to my webpage, which is www.mentaldrive.com, and there's links there to Facebook, Instagram, X, everything.
Awesome. Dr. Josh, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks, David.
I'm David Sears. This has been Highway to Health for Tony Curry Radio, and reminding you to treat yourself nicely and have a nice day.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.